This episode is sponsored in part by Viral Sweep. Thinking of running a giveaway or contest? Meet Viral Sweep, the app that makes it easy to build and manage campaigns that drive traffic and boost brand visibility. With Viral Sweep, you can engage customers through Instagram giveaways, automate winner selection, and ensure smooth prize distribution. Viral Sweep also keeps you compliant with legal regulations, so you don't have to stress about the details. Plus, you get helpful analytics and seamless integrations to make campaign management a breeze. Need a hand with setup? Viral Sweep support team and managed services are ready to help. Start engaging your audience today. Download Viral Sweep on the Shopify App Store and watch your brand grow. New customers can get 50% off the annual plan. Just tell them in the live chat that the unofficial Shopify podcast sent you. That's Viral Sweep. So here's the problem. Shopify brands are spending more than ever to acquire customers. Like, it's just the way of the world, right? Our old tricks aren't necessarily working quite so well. So our cost of customer acquisition, especially that top of funnel, is getting more expensive, is more expensive than ever. And other tactics that may have worked in the past aren't working quite so well anymore. So what is working these days? What is the landscape? What are people seeing out there? And I've got someone who's in a unique position to talk to us about it. Smriti Jayaraman is going to join us, and she has an interesting perspective from her seat at the venture capital table. And she's going to walk us through some of the tech, some of the things she's seeing. And you know, when I talked to her in the pre-interview, I thought, wow, she's got so much experience. There is so much to learn here and share with us. And so we're going to dive into it. Smriti, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here and love the intro.
The first thing I want to go over is AI and SEO, right? How in the past, organic search was such a big deal if you could get it. You know, if you could optimize your site, get that free search traffic from Google, you know, free being we're not paying ads, but still had to put in the effort to get it. But now suddenly, you know, I heard last year SEO is dead. And then by Q4, I heard, well, SEO is back because these search engines, you could game, or you gave the search engine for these AI search tools like Perplexity. So if AI-driven search is changing everything, well, would you agree with that statement, first of all?
It is. It's going to continue to. So I think the short answer is AI is absolutely changing what the top of the funnel looks like. Today, you know, I go into ChatGPT or Perplexity or I ask AI, any of the AI search engines, and I'm asking it, you know, for the same thing that I used to go to Google, but I'm probably also asking it in a different way. And that's why I say it's evolving a little bit. And brands, you know, it sort of was a major shift that brands now suddenly have to rethink their top of funnel strategy. And you know, I think it means a couple things, right? It's actually an opportunity for brands that historically may not have performed with either non-branded search or branded search on Google. They didn't have the budgets to necessarily rank high on Google. Or I think more interestingly, they may not have had business models that lent themselves to Google-based search because, you know, they didn't have brand names that resonated or they weren't intent-based products. So someone wouldn't actually be Googling for them in the first place. And so they had to really, obviously, spend a lot of money on paid media and other channels. So I think it's a moment of opportunity. Now, of course, that'll calibrate. But I think right now, if you're a Shopify brand, it's actually a great time to be innovating around this new funnel that's coming from AI-powered search engines. And just to kind of give you, you know, a couple examples of what that looks like, we are seeing businesses going back to traditional landing pages and just sort of infiltrating the internet with content, with landing pages tied to specific occasions that their products are used for, tied to specific attributes that their products have. We are seeing a lot of folks using AI to actually help them identify what keyword search now looks like in a AI search engine world, which may not have been the keywords that folks were using on Google, right? Simple example, if I'm a cowboy boot brand, you know, previously I might have been like, hey, I need cowboy boots. But now, if I'm going to a search engine that is AI powered, I'm probably asking it a different set of questions. I'm saying, hey, what's the best outfit to wear to the rodeo this weekend? And so if I'm a cowboy boot brand, I no longer just need to compete, you know, on cowboy boots. I need to be thinking about, someone is talking about the rodeo. They're saying weekend. Like, when is the rodeo, right? How do I, in this town where, I have a user that I want to go acquire that may have been tough for me to acquire before because I can't compete. So certainly I think SEO generally, and then thinking about the tech stack around SEO, how do I identify keywords? How do I in real time automate use of those keywords? And then of course, you know, the other thing that's happening with AI powered search is it is, you know, I won't say the early days, maybe in the middle days of actually being able to power image and voice search, which Google, traditional Google search, you know, had capabilities, but nobody really used them. And so again, another opportunity for brands. Obviously, you know, many Shopify brands have amazing visual content, visual assets, maybe have, you know, done interesting content in the past or are doing it now around video and sound, and can actually now perform and with those assets and show up with those assets because users are using AI-powered search for visual and audio in a way that they never used Google before.
So really what's happening here, it used to be that Google was the be-all, end-all. I type in my search, and then I, you know, ads would appear, and then I had my listing results, which were, you know, ideally I want to be on that first page, and realistically top five, top three, and if I'm number one, amazing. That idea of I want to rank at the top for particular phrases really has not changed, because if I'm using a tool like Perplexity or, you know, ChatGPT's web search, they're essentially still doing Google searches, but they're coming back and they're summarizing that info for me based on those top results. And then including, they cite their sources. Like, you could click the link and then it'll pop into, you know, that actual, the page of wherever it got the info from that it's summarizing. Cause that, man, that thing likes to make stuff up. So, you know, I want to check it.
It does. Yeah.
And so, you know, we went from like, well, SEO is dead because the AI just knows. So it answers me outright, to discovering, oh, you know, you can't actually trust what it says because it, you know, it doesn't really know. It makes things up, to now we're doing just a automated version of search with summary. And so, with your suggestions there, where A, I want to get more landing pages out there that have, you know, specific phrases tied to them. Well, that's no different than what we were doing before. And in fact, it becomes more important to do more, because maybe we get really lucky and that becomes part of the AI's training data. And so now it just knows, like, oh, these are the best cowboy boots for the rodeo, kind of thing. So yeah, for sure, SEO and content marketing, it seems like it's making a comeback.
Yeah, it's definitely making a comeback. And again, I think landing pages is just one strategy. Obviously, rethinking, you know, native sites, rethinking blog posts, and even how you're engaging influencers and affiliates, all contributes to how you perform in SEO. And yes, in many ways, you know, maybe the words are different. Maybe, you know, the number of opportunities is greater. Some of the experience sure does look similar. But I think what we're also seeing, you know, we're investors in an AI search engine. So we are sort of getting the real-time feedback on how users are evolving their use of these platforms.
To know which one?
Yeah, sure. It's called iAsk AI. They're performing amazingly. So iAsk.ai is the URL. They are top-ranked in terms of accuracy based on a study done about 6 months ago. They also do really well with sort of Gen Z and younger users in many ways, sort of the way that they've built the speed, the engine, the user experience, the ability to curate output based on, you know, if I only want verified sources, or I only want sources that come from publications that I can cite in a, you know, research paper, or I want, you know, really short summary, really long summary. They, you know, they've sort of performed really well in all of that, and all of that tends to appeal to sort of the younger user. The other thing about the younger user, to your point, is the younger user is not Google native in the way, you know, the millennial and Gen X and boomer is. They haven't used Google for 25, 30 years. And so they actually don't necessarily behave with these engines the same way we would behave with Google. The usage tends to be much more conversational. There is a back and forth. They might say, ask the first question, and they're like, actually, can you focus on this part of your answer? Or can you elaborate on that? Or can you give me a shorter answer to that? And again, I think the opportunity there is, of course, you still need to proliferate content, but the opportunity there is rethinking, you know, what is the need that you're appealing to in your buyer? And it's not going to be, I want to find a gray shirt, you know, a gray casual t-shirt, or I need a really great webcam. It's going to be something perhaps more involved. And, you know, also, I think, like I said, gives opportunities to brands to sort of like show up when they never were able to before, because they can appeal uniquely to a use case. They can authentically talk about, you know, their distinct attributes, and they can authentically talk about the problems that they're solving.
So in practice, this takes the form of content. It's text content plus image, but the image you're going to attach alt text to it to describe it, which again, like AI can write the alt text. I've done that already in Shopify, which is great. And AI can help come up with ideation and then help create the article. But garbage in, garbage out, you know, we don't want to flood the internet with low quality, thin results, is what Google politely calls it. It's thin results.
100%. Yeah. And again, that's why I use the word authentic, which is obviously, you know, an overused word. You know, for a few years now, since kind of the burst of the e-commerce bubble and the realization that brands have had that not every brand is built to be a DTC business, you know, based on a bunch of user testing and consumer research that we've done, like authenticity, which is an overused term, actually stands out as one of the most successful ways that brands have been able to navigate the growth in CAC. And, you know, anytime... One, you know, you just have to be very nimble. You have to keep trying different things, figure out what sticks. You can't sort of remain stale. But then having authenticity be sort of that thread of what the strategy is, what the content looks like, what the visual assets look like. And again, visual assets now, I think, have more power than they did previously, just because of how sort of AI-powered search and internet engagement can actually leverage images. Of course, that has to be sort of, you know, the underpinning of all of this content. It's not, again, we definitely don't want content for the sake of content.
It's kind of interesting. I don't see brands creating nearly as many landing pages or content pages as one would think, when the criticism of AI is that I could just generate AI slop continuously. And yet at the same time, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If I put in good content, you know, if I do some research, give it an outline, I can, you know, define brand tone of voice. I could use AI to generate great content as well as bad content. I just think more people would take advantage of it. It feels like such a missed opportunity at the moment.
Yeah, I think, look, I think we've also, you know, now dealt with several years of the, you know, inundation of content. So I think people are wary of that. You know, the other thing is we talk about just volume, but then in terms of quality, we're also seeing, you know, consumer brands and consumer tech companies, frankly, really think about quality in terms of like what actually, you know, what do users want, right? So there's authentic to your brand, like what does your brand actually stand for? And then there's what do users actually want to engage with? What type of content? And you know, I think I gave you this example potentially when we chatted earlier on, but something that AI can also do that's really interesting is make content more interactive. And
Ooh, okay. In
general, you know, we see that interactive content outperforms static content by at least 50%. I think that's an understated number. It's like 53% is sort of the stated number, but in terms of more engagement. And I think it can be much higher.
My mind goes immediately to quizzes or polls, you know, vote for your favorite or like find the right tea for me. What did you have in mind with interactive content?
When we are still in the era where the consumer is curious about what AI will tell them about themselves. And that we are seeing being actually leveraged quite interestingly. And so what used to be a poll or a quiz or you know, all of the brands that went to market with a funnel that ultimately they claimed would personalize your hair care or personalize your skincare or personalize your smoothie mix or whatever. You know, that was interesting for a moment, or maybe more than a moment. But now with, you know, this curiosity around what AI can tell me about myself, and as much as there is absolutely still this distrust in the market, there is, I think, just a little more curiosity, mystery, and maybe a belief that, like, you know, it's like a horoscope, right? There's a belief that, like, this might actually be more interesting and accurate than just what the, you know, 5 years ago machine learning algorithm told me based on a quiz. And so we are seeing some interesting customer acquisition plays gamifying that, right? Like, what would AI tell you is, you know, I'll use a simple one. We talked to a company recently. I won't name the name, but I'm sure they'd be fine with the publicity. We're not investors, but their top of funnel gamification is, do you want to know what day you're going to die? And it is ultimately a, you know, health and wellness platform, but, you know,
that's such a good hook, absolute,
what a great hook, right? I might not want to give you all this health and wellness information if you're like, take this quiz and we'll help you, you know, find a way to get healthier. But I definitely want to know what day I'm going to die. And so, yeah, it's, I mean, it works phenomenally. We have a business in our portfolio, a fantastic consumer tech platform, AI native consumer tech platform called Bold Voice, which helps non-native English speakers improve their accents to make them more confident in speaking when they speak with an American accent or an English accent. And they had a sort of productization that went to market end of last year called the Accent Oracle, which was supposed to tell really anyone, but specifically non-native English speakers, but I know a lot of native English speakers also use the tool to tell you where your accent comes from. And if it's a combination of accents, what that combination is and in what ratios. And, you know, they basically grew like, you know, 3x in a few months based on this with, you know, completely, there's completely organic growth, because of course everyone wants to know, like, oh yeah, tell me where my accent comes from, right? It's the same sort of like mystery and curiosity that like 23andMe fed off of when they first came out.
Ever had a customer cancel an order because they were shopping while high or because they broke up with their significant other? Those are real reasons customers could cancel, and they're a real headache for both you and your customers. Why should they have to email support to change, cancel, or update an order? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, your customers can edit their orders themselves through a self-service portal. That means fewer support tickets, faster shipping, and fewer returns. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their order support by 99% with Cleverific. Now it's your turn. Listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast get 50% off the Pro Plan. Just $49 a month. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50 at checkout. It's less hassle, happier customers with Cleverific. There's novelty to it.
There's totally novelty to it.
Especially in e-commerce. Novelty really, it helps get people engaged. It helps sell.
Exactly. And especially when you can tie it to what your core product or value proposition is. And, you know, in some cases, when you can, in the case of Bold Voice, which again, that's consumer tech, not products, but you know, they have actually, they're the only ones with the data that can actually tell you at the level of quality that they can tell you where your accent comes from. So it's just another way to think about, you know, it's sort of productizing and gamifying based on the data that these businesses have. You know, an e-commerce brand, the same thing would apply, right? You've got unique data on your product, your users. And, you know, I think it's not unrelated to, for example, when Chipotle came out with the receipt that tells you the digital footprint, not the digital, the environmental footprint. You know, I'm a tech investor when I defer to digital footprint. They tell you the environmental footprint of your burrito bowl or burrito or whatever you ordered. It actually did really, really well for them, because it's this moment of like connection with the brand. It's sort of data that they have that nobody else could really give you or provide you. You can't just like Google that information. And so yeah, I think it's these unique moments of connection with the brand. It feels very personal, but it is actually only something that brand can deliver to you.
You know, it's like, so it, our core problem here is simply the paid ads are expensive, right? And so everyone's looking for alternatives to that, to scale, to grow, you know, and to smooth out when, you know, there's an outage at Meta or whatever. And so gamification marketing, which is these interactive elements, AI-driven quizzes, AI can make a lot of really neat stuff possible. What about with AI, with content marketing, what I'm starting to see, and it seems inevitable now, is just like full-on fictional AI influencers. Do we have any experience there or thoughts?
We do a little bit. It's hard to generalize what that means, right? Of course, one knee-jerk reaction, maybe it's inauthentic and these aren't real influencers and it's not a personal experience. On the other hand, the way we're able to proliferate, whether it's a persona or an avatar or an experience, can drive a level of inclusivity in someone's experience with the brand that couldn't happen when you had to find a certain person who looked a certain way or had a certain background or had a certain experience. And, the fine line is, of course, transparency. And I think, very quickly we've seen that brands need to be very transparent about, is this a paid? I mean, maybe this happened with even paid influencers. And now this next sort of evolution is there, an AI component to this? I won't get too specific, but certainly, in the fashion world, for example, we are seeing the use of AI to enable users to see, a body that looks like theirs or someone who's, their height, to internalize what a product is going to look like on them. And in the influencer world, we've actually seen for some categories that micro-influencer is actually sort of at a peak, and everyone thought micro-influencer was dead 3 years ago. And so I think there's room for the authentic, more authentic is again, I'm overusing the word. There's room for the real individual to still stand out maybe more than ever because of this fear of, what is AI powered, what is AI driven. And I think we're actually going to see that it creates a little bit it future proofs sort of the legacy influencer a little bit. And at the same time, there are absolutely avenues to engage shoppers in a way that you couldn't before, because at a cost that is actually viable to an emerging brand, you can deliver that kind of authentic, personalized experience.
I like that take. Hey, you can make these hyper-personalized experience, but it also creates more value for just really slicing things thinner. We want to find content that resonates with us, that I could find a whole bunch of people who make Shopify content, but I'm only going to listen to the one that's like, okay, I like this presentation or I like this person, right? It isn't necessarily about the topic or the content. Now there's so much available to you. It is about, finding what resonates with me. So there's advantages.
Yeah. And I think I would encourage brands to, sorry to cut you off. I think I would encourage brands to lean into the parts of their business that are clearly not AI powered as much as they are embracing the AI tech stack. To give you a simple example from our portfolio, we're investors in a company called Songfinch, which has real musicians, real artists developing personalized songs for individuals based on, their experiences, their loved ones, et cetera. It's a phenomenal product. The emergence of AI powered music, we were like, oh, this is a big threat, right? Because, now someone can create their own personalized song for my husband, wife, daughter, whatnot. And it actually turns out it just created much more space for Songfinch's sort of message to resonate with individuals, right? Because, you have all these videos out there of people AI powered song that they created and someone's laughing at it, is joking. And then you have Songfinch's content out there, which is someone is crying because they hear a song that someone wrote for them that has just that personal touch. And, obviously I think there's just in the entertainment, music, cinema, sort of writing community, there's going to be, continue to be big waves of sort of how innovation and technology can really, protect those industries in this environment. But I think from just from a brand standpoint, I think it's an opportunity as well for every Shopify brand. Sort of think about, okay, if I'm going to embrace the AI tech stack, I'm going to use AI to automate keyword search and generate some content and, you know, personalize and optimize my funnel. Of course, I'm also going to recognize that like a real human experience or a real narrative that I can tell on my site, in my influencer marketing, that's also going to stand out a little bit more now.
You're fascinating. I love your takes. I'm so glad we did this. But okay, do you, as a venture capitalist, have you done any investing in Shopify apps?
Depends how you categorize Shopify apps.
Shopify app does make it sound like I'm, you know, into small individual Shopify apps. No, Shopify tech stack will expand. Or, e-com tech will go really broad.
Yes, we absolutely have. In various shapes and forms, a couple of which are certainly sort of like AI first, and one of which actually is a great example of some of what I'm talking about. It's called Laws of Motion. Lawsofmotion.ai is sort of the tech stack site. They also basically incubated the technology in their own D2C brand, which I think is actually like, you don't get more credible than that to, you know, build technology for brands when you built it in your own brand. And it's basically AI powered sizing technology, you know, the fit tech landscape. If you're a Shopify fashion brand or really any e-commerce apparel brand, you, we find many brands have been burned by sort of the fit tech promise. And it turns out now,
so, yeah, I get why they jumped into it. Just from working with apparel and lifestyle brands, what's your biggest issue? Is the biggest barrier to people buying is, hey, will this fit me?
Yep.
And then once they do buy it, oh, I got to exchange it. Well, you know, if someone buys a single item and they're the first customer, I probably lost money by the time I've exchanged it for them, just in 100%. The hope that they make another purchase. Like for so many merchants will just throw money at whatever solution can solve this. And as a customer, you know, we want it too.
100%. I think returns last year averaged 40% for most e-commerce apparel brands. Like, I mean, that's, you've got to have a really high gross margin to be able to sustain a business with that. And so 100%, it almost became table stakes at some point because you're like, I've got to have this on my site. What we found is actually most traditional fit tech solutions, they didn't price based on, you know, were they reducing returns or were they like impacting the flow? They made most of their claims actually on the acquisition side, not on the returns reduction side, because again, it became table stakes to have, you know, a sizing sort of quiz or whatever on your website. And maybe you would get a couple more percent of people to actually like take the step and buy, but your returns, you know, remain the same. Like everyone's return rates were, you know, super high, if not went up, because they had to start now offering free shipping to compete with Amazon. So everyone's like, yeah, of course I'll just buy every size, right? Turns out AI, this is an area where AI actually does make a dramatic difference in the power of this technology. And so Laws of Motion, for example, again, incubated the technology within their own D2C brand. You know, this the quality of AI today can not just say, hey, look, you know, you wear this size in this brand and this size in this brand, so we think you're X size in our brand. It can actually predict your measurements, not by you putting them in, but with a two photo sort of input, right? So that's basically their go-to-market is you can fill out a quiz, you can also put in your measurements, but the de facto input is I take two photos, just two photos of myself, no video, nothing, and it predicts measurements within such a high level of accuracy that, for example, Laws of Motion's own brand has a less than 1% return rate.
Whoa.
And that's like tip of the iceberg. I know, whoa, hence we invested. That's the tip of the iceberg with what they can actually do with all that data, right? Like they can, you know, the big vision here is, of course, not. Returns reduction is its own huge vision, because just think about going from 40% to 1%, like what can that can do to the P&L of an apparel brand. But the big vision could also be, or is also now, you know, I think it's something like, I'm going to misquote these numbers, but it's something like 80% of the US population actually fits into like less than 10% of sizes available to the US population. And they now have the data to not just prove that, but then to help brands think about, you know, how they should be creating sizes. And there's a huge product development angle. There's a supply chain angle as brands think about, you know, what do they need to have in inventory versus not from a sizing perspective. So it, I think that's transformational technology. And then again, another example of like also how AI kind of makes things inclusive or can make things, products, brands more inclusive.
Are your upsells stuck in the Stone Age? Your store runs on data, so why aren't your upsells? Outdated upsell apps make you guess, test, and tweak manually. That's costing you money. Zipify one-click upsell changes everything. Its AI engine automates upsells, analyzing every cart in real time to offer the highest converting product. No guesswork, no setup, just results. Over 10,000 Shopify stores trust OCU, and it's already generated nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So flip the switch and let AI handle your upsells. Try Zipify one-click upsell free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Don't leave money on the table. Start AI-powered upselling today. Well, it also helps reduce waste if we're more accurately predicting, you know, what sizes we'll be able to sell consistently. Or, you know, there's also people receive an item, never return it, but it doesn't fit them. You know, guess what? It's going to Goodwill. Or a landfill, or, you know, ends up on a beach in Ghana, which, you know, that's the thing we're trying to avoid. While at the same time that, you know, avoiding that helps greatly improve unit economics in a business and our bottom line, which, you know, everybody wins here. I want to know, what tech do you think is overhyped, right? Like, we're going hard on AI, and like, I've bought into the hype. It's obvious. I'm not going to hide it. Is there anything you think is overhyped right now?
There's a lot that's overhyped right now. We saw the emergence of sort of how AI was going to affect the shopping experience and a lot of innovation around that, I would say, over the last 2 years. Sort of with the belief that, like, okay, you know, rather than rely on Google or even any of the, you know, new emerging or now more past, way past emerging AI search engines, you know, kind of what like LTK did for fashion, can we take that even closer to the individual and allow, or not just fashion, for brands and products in general, how do we allow users to really like curate what they want to buy in a way that is hyper-personalized and essentially create the like universal basket concept, right? Where I am, you know, shopping on all these different sites. I may not want to transact right away on everything. How do I bring everything into one place and then be able to engage with whether it's images or links or some sort of catalog or repository I create myself? And there was, you know, AI was a big part of that, not necessarily this generation of AI, but, you know, maybe a couple years ago generation, just the ability to like efficiently do that curation, you know, pull like, oh, if you like this, you like that, and a recommendation engine component of it. I think we're yet to see anyone really break out in that. And I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's really hard to get consumers' attention. And so if you're, I think the biggest hurdle is if you're getting them, if you're trying to get them to like engage with a standalone, whether it's an app or a tool of some kind, that's hard to do. And the experiences also, the product experiences just weren't that great. The user experiences weren't that great. I think another, you know, sort of something similar happened, I think, to the like native search concept, which is, I think now, you know, there's probably a question as to what happens to native search. And by native search, I mean search on your Shopify site. So again, there's, you know, businesses that, you know, again, solving the same problem, right? Acquisition is expensive. LTV doesn't compensate for it. How do I get, you know, how do I bring in users, more inexpensively? And then once I have them, how do I monetize them better? We saw, I think we talked a little bit last time about just like what's going to happen to subscription and membership, which we can talk about. That
yeah,
was
let's
another
go there.
Play.
Like,
yeah, sure. Yeah.
Acquisition and retention. How do we keep customers once we have them, right? If I can, even if I'm going to break even or lose a little money on that initial customer acquisition, how do I hold on to them longer now?
Absolutely. So one, I think, strategy there is once I'm on the site, right, AI tools that help personalize merchandising of my site, you know, can also adapt in real time to how I'm behaving on the site. especially again in a cookie-less world and in a privacy focused world, you know, brands still just don't have all this data to be like, oh, you came to my site, I know, you know, the last 50 things that you shopped for, unless that brand happens to have that data on the individual. But I do know what you're doing on my site. I do know how long you've hovered on this, that you went back to this product page and then you went, you know, to this product page, but then you came back to this color or whatever. I think that actually has the potential to be pretty powerful. We've looked at a few businesses in this space. We haven't made a bet yet, but I think sort of, you know, call it like intelligent merchandising, I think absolutely has a role to play. You know, the one I was speaking about earlier is
intelligent merchandising. So the way I'm picturing this, based on how you described it, which I think is really clever, I think algorithm anxiety is real. I have it with Instagram Reels, like that Instagram, their For You page equivalent. It's like, if you even slowed down to look at something, they're like, oh, you slowed down? You looked at a toad photo? Oh, guess what?
You're into toads.
You're into toads, buddy. Like, oh, man. But sometimes it gets it right. But like, now that I've seen it, you know, I'm scared to use the thing. But I think that same concept, you're right, absolutely, you could apply to stores with big catalogs or even, you know, smaller catalogs, but like several types, just to help make it more relevant when I'm, you know, reaching out to people, whether that's retargeting or email. Is there any tools that do this?
There are a bunch of tools that do this. We're not investors in any, so I'm hesitant to name names. But there are, and I think there are a bunch. And then there are also a bunch that are, you know, sort of like chatbot enabled or now sort of agent enabled to take that experience even further. So it's not just that, you know, the site rendering is personalized and reacting in real time to how I'm behaving with the site. But now you've got, you know, sort of an agent or a chatbot or something that is helping me navigate it in a way that is, you know, intended to be a much better experience than the chatbots that emerged on websites a few years ago that were really more customer experience focused. This is more like, you know, engagement focused, right? Like, oh, like, I saw you really like this color. Like, do you want to, you know, have you checked out this other product of ours in this color? Not, do you need help, right? And then I think, you know, the other thing is just like on-site search, which I think, I don't want to say is overhyped. I think that has not been figured out yet, right? But is there an opportunity now that the entire search funnel is changing? Previously, the belief was like, if you made it to my site, like you already know what you want. That's why you came here. You know, I think that's not actually true. And there's data that supports that. But brands just found it very difficult to be like, I'm going to invest in like a, you know, a really high functioning search engine on my site when I could just spend those dollars on Google and try to just rank really high on Google. Now there may be an opportunity to rethink, like when someone's on your site, you know, they might have come there for, you know, a number of reasons, not just because you ranked high on Google. You may want to find more ways to engage them. And then, you know, on the other end, on the LTV side, as you said, you know, we saw the emergence of subscription in the post-Amazon era with brands just trying to sort of compete. We're now seeing some AI-powered tools that are really going to market to try to get brands that are not sort of de facto subscription to think about building a subscription offering. I think easier said than done, right? We find a lot of those tools, at the end of the day, they're still kind of in RFPs for subscription-powered you know, products that are sort of inherently subscription. Now, on the other hand, membership models, I think, is something that we will see emerge. And, you know, you do sort of need some unique tech to be able to turn a one-off invoicing business into a recurring revenue business. And there are a set of brands that I think are succeeding at building community and membership. It's something like, we looked at an investment in the space, so I know this number, but I think on average, like 80% of an e-commerce brand's value comes from how they define their sort of existing buyers. And, you know, there's a whole calculation around like over what timeline do you define an existing buyer. But I think the headline, even putting the number aside, is there is a lot of value to be captured from your existing, you know, your repeat customer, someone who's come in once, like now you don't have to spend a single dollar bringing them into the top of the funnel again, but you can really, you know, invest a little bit in engaging how much they spend with you, how much they evangelize you, et cetera.
I think a missed opportunity, but a certainly a growing importance is membership. Subscription is a tough sell. Just, hey, we're going to ding your credit card once a month and this product's going to ship to your house. People understand that that's, you know, that's a much tougher sell than the one-time purchase. If you have a consumable good, those subscriptions are great. But then, you know, if you don't have a consumable good, how do you sell it? And how do you get that recurring, sweet, sweet recurring revenue? And I think the answer is membership model. We're seeing more of it. But I never just, you know, what's it look like? Like, what advantages do we give them? You know, Amazon sold us memberships just to get faster shipping.
Yeah. And look, I think people still don't do the ROI calculation on that. I mean, I certainly don't, right? I have DashPass, for example. I DoorDash somewhat often. I don't know how often. I have no idea if like what I'm paying each month is actually worth, you know, the savings that I apparently get. I mean, every time I check out a DoorDash, there's a different fee structure. Sometimes there's a delivery fee. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes there's a service fee. Sometimes there isn't. I'm sure there are people out there who are more thoughtful than me. Yeah, exactly. So I know there are people out there who get it. But I think the point is not that people don't care. It's that it is hard to communicate the value that you get. But that's it. Again, where, you know, at the same time, like, your repeat customers spend 2/3 more than your non-repeat customers for, you know, any brand, right? So if you can drive someone to become a repeat customer in any way, shape, or form, even for a limited period of time, like, there are huge returns on that. And I think also just as a behavior, subscription has continued to be, you know, something that buyers are comfortable with, right? Like, subscription is growing pretty rapidly, even in the sort of downtick, if you will, I won't say downturn, downtick of e-commerce. Subscription e-commerce actually continued to grow quite quickly. So I think, yeah, you're right. It is sort of, what do you provide them? I think brands have to be thoughtful and have to probably iterate a little bit and A/B test a little bit around what that looks like. You know, is it perks? Is it discounts? Or is it, you know, sort of maybe access to the community that's created around a brand, right? I mean, way back when, like, FabFitFun, which has been through many generations of its business and highs and lows, but I think did actually one of the best jobs of building community, and their first couple chapters, I think that was the underpinning. Is it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the products, it wasn't the quality of the products, it wasn't that, you know, they weren't really, from a shipping standpoint, I don't think they were doing anything innovative. It was this idea that, like, you had people in this community you wanted to show this stuff to, and they wanted to show it back to you, and they wanted to talk about it, you know, and there was a willingness to pay for that sense of community.
That subscription membership model, not overhyped, because there is such outsized impact that it can have on our business, and, you know, by adding that recurring revenue and not having to reacquire customers.
Exactly.
In your experience, what's one thing you think a Shopify store owner, you know, an e-com brand founder should stop doing today? They're just like, look, you guys are wasting your time.
Well, this is maybe the philosophical answer. I think, you know, relying on what works is always dangerous. I think we're in, you know, this has always been true, but we're definitely in a moment where things are changing very quickly. You know, I used to say, like, your hero product is your hero product. Like, just invest everything in that, right? And I think, you know, while that might still be true, I think this notion of, like, stagnation, or sort of assuming that, like, what worked, you know, for the last 6 months is going to work for the next 6 months is very dangerous, because the customer acquisition landscape is changing, the, you know, cost of fulfillment landscape is changing, the, you know, the requirement to which you need to be in retail, for example, alongside your, you know, your Shopify presence is constantly changing, and also the, like, economics on those two things are constantly changing. So I think the, like, maybe the tough truth is, I would say at least every 6 months, you've got to ask the tough questions, right? Like, what might be around the corner? What am I sort of just, like, relying on as being true forever that may not be? That obviously goes for AI as well. And I think, you know, the other thing to maybe not stop doing, but I think there is, you know, there are categories which are certainly having a moment, and there are ebbs and flows around that. And, you know, beauty, for example, beauty was great, and then it wasn't, and then it's great again. But I think it's,
yeah, but Peloton would, I'm sure, have thoughts on the topic.
Exactly. And so I think you are relying less and less on category trends and relying more and more on like your own, you know, connection to the consumer. And does this brand speak to the consumer? And do you have loyal users, right? It's not, it's a lot of, and again, I think this is why subscription, membership, LTV, all those things that we talked about are super important, because it's kind of like it used to be, all right, we're going to ride this category trend and everyone's going to buy this and it's great because everyone wants this. But now it's like, no, you find your buyer. They want you not because they love the category. They want you because you are you as a brand. And then you really build, you know, your entire strategy around that kind of, you know, cheerleader buyer or hero customer, if you will.
For sure. Wow. I love your perspective. I didn't expect this episode to turn into like, hey, here's kind of near future tech predictions, but that's what you gave us. And I loved it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You asked great questions. So I'm not in the business of knowing the future, but it's always fun to think about how things could trend. You know, I'm also happy to be proven wrong, which happens all the time.
Currently, you're a principal at Corazon Capital. Tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. We're an early stage venture firm. The origin story is one of our founding partners is a serial entrepreneur in consumer internet businesses, iconic names that you know, many of you have probably heard, starting, you know, largely in the dating world and the ed tech world. And then, you know, also a bit in the commerce tech world. And that really influences who we are as a firm. We are very high touch, very sort of like operator-led mindset, and very heavily focused on consumer tech, tech-enabled consumer products, and commerce enablement, where we invest. And we're based in Chicago and Los Angeles, but we invest all over the country. And yeah, welcome new ideas, great founders. Nothing is too early for us. So, but yeah, we love what we do, and we're really passionate about these spaces.
And if someone wanted to reach out to you, would you mind if I put your LinkedIn in the show notes?
No, not at all.
All right. I'll include that. Smriti Jayaraman, thank you so much. Corazon Capital, you know, check it out. Everything, all the apps, resources you mentioned, I'm going to put those in the show notes so people have them. And, you know, I hope your crystal ball proves to be true. I think it will.
I'm not sure I care strongly that it comes true, but I do hope that, you know, great brands that are innovating and staying on top of trends are very successful.
I hope so too. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.